Hey guys, finding the perfect gift for the food lover in your life is easy. Thanks to Goldbelly. Goldbelly ships America's most iconic foods straight from world-famous restaurants right to your door. So if you want to treat someone to Joe's Stone Crab from Miami, Franklin Barbecue from Texas, or desserts from famous foodies like Ina Garten or Martha Stewart, Goldbelly has you covered with free shipping anywhere in the country. Just go to goldbelly.com and for a limited time, get 20% off your first order with promo code GIFT. That's promo code GIFT. Hey guys, finding the perfect gift for the food lover in your life is easy. Thanks to Goldbelly. Goldbelly ships America's most iconic foods straight from world-famous restaurants right to your door. So if you want to treat someone to Joe's Stone Crab from Miami, Franklin Barbecue from Texas, or desserts from famous foodies like Ina Garten or Martha Stewart, Goldbelly has you covered with free shipping anywhere in the country. Just go to goldbelly.com and for a limited time, get 20% off your first order with promo code GIFT. That's promo code GIFT.
You are listening to a Hillbilly Horror Stories classic episode.
This podcast is part of the Dark Myths Collective. Visit darkmyths.org to discover more shows like this one. The darkness awaits.
It's about to be a fun ride. Follow along, watch as we slide. Paranormal just hit the lights. Goosebumps all through the night. Mix in just a little bit of twang. That girl sure can't do a thing. Together, hillbillies go insane. Laugh so hard it'll hurt your brain. Podcast you won't ever change. These two here, they got the recipe. Sat on back and listen in to some of our darkest mysteries, eh?
Welcome to Hillbilly Horror Stories. And now here's your host, Jerry and Tracy Polly, and their dog Ninja.
On Saturday, October 12th, you can catch Twisted Philly Podcast live with acclaimed paranormal podcast Hillbilly Horror Stories at the Philadelphia Ethical Society on Rittenhouse Square in Philadelphia. The event begins around 6-ish. We'll start with a meet and greet. Jeremy Collins from Podcasts We Listen To will be joining us as MC. Then Jerry and Tracy from Hillbilly Horror Stories will take the stage. They're coming all the way up from Kentucky to visit the city of brotherly love and sisterly affection and meet Twisted Philly listeners. After Jerry and Tracy, I'll share some of my favorite Philadelphia haunted history, tales I haven't shared on the podcast, which will only be available at the live show. Jeremy will host an Ask Us Anything. You can even get on the mic with your own paranormal experiences if you'd like to share. There will be time to shop for merchandise, we'll have giveaways, I'll have some prizes. It's going to be a spooky good time, getting everyone in the mood for Halloween. Tickets are just $20 for two live podcast shows on one night. I've got a link for tickets on Twitter and Facebook, and there's also information on Instagram. You won't want to miss this. We're going to have a blast. If you prefer to head home a little early, we'll be wrapping up before 9:30, so it won't be a late night. Or if you're up for spending a little time in the city, you can join me and Jeremy, Jerry and Tracy for a night out after the show. Rittenhouse Square has some of the best bars and restaurants in the city, just blocks from the Ethical Society. We can't wait to see you on the 12th.
Hey guys, and welcome to episode 163 of Hillbilly Horror Stories. I'm Jerry.
I'm Tracy. Hey guys.
She sounded so happy.
I am so happy. I'm so happy. It's been a beautiful weekend. That's pretty laid back weekend, actually.
Good.
Yeah. Hope you guys had a great weekend, too.
Obviously, we want to start by thanking all of our military and civil servants all over the world, no matter which country you represent. And it's a special week because 9/11 was just a couple of days ago, and we always remember.
Absolutely. We'll never, ever forget that. God bless you guys. We keep you in our prayers, and thank you for keeping us safe.
We want to make sure everybody knows that if they're struggling right now with something going on in life, that they can call the suicide hotline, 1-800-273-8255, or text 741-741 here in the United States if you're a texter. Or you can obviously reach out to Tracy or myself, or even join the group and get some support that way.
Absolutely. Always here for you guys.
So while we're on that subject, put some reestablish some rules in the group. We want everybody in the group to feel happy and comfortable and to be a safe place. That is what the group is for. And yes, we are a paranormal podcast, but that is not our intentions for the group. We want some paranormal stuff, and we want people to do that. But we also want people to be happy. So we pretty much allow any kind of funny memes to be posted, as far as if they're not too far out of whack. And, people that will tell us what they got going on in their life right now. Mm-hmm. If they want some help. And that's what that's all about. We've had some people posting some, I guess you could say, inappropriate stuff. We don't allow any kind of politics, so we definitely don't allow any kind of racism or anything on the site. So those things aren't going to get deleted as soon as we see them. We would prefer you not do it to begin with. But if they get deleted, that's why. But we've also had some people say, hey, you know, I'm glad that you guys offer a place for people to talk about their issues, but some of us don't want to see all that. I get it. We can't make everybody happy, but that's going to be our platform, and that's what we choose to do with it. What we have done to try to compromise is at the beginning of when you log on to the Facebook group, after each show, like after this show tonight, Natasha always puts up a thread that is the show thread, so you can respond to what went on in that show, what you liked, what you didn't like, and you can talk about paranormal stuff. And for that week, it'll be posted at the front of the page. So if you just want to talk about paranormal and you don't want to see any issues that somebody might be having, that post right there is specifically for you. Mm-hmm. It will be nothing but paranormal. Or you can just go to our Facebook page, Hillbilly Horror Stories. There's 4 or 5 posts every single day on there that's nothing but paranormal and horror-related videos and stuff like that.
Yeah.
So we keep the group kind of separate from the page in that aspect of the page is strictly paranormal and show.
Yeah, we want to have the best worlds, and we love our little group that we have, and, you know, we're just one big happy family. All sunshine and unicorns, please.
Absolutely. Okay, so we got a little later in the show, we'll talk about some stuff going on, including my new podcast, and we'll talk about some merchandise we've got on sale and all that, but let's jump into the story.
Okay.
I love doing...
Lamp? Sorry. I do can't not. Have it. Sorry, can't help
That's all I need. Steve Carell trying to sue us. I love stories from England. It seems like they've got some of the most awesome stories.
I know. Isn't that right?
And this is one that's fairly popular. A lot of shows have done versions of this one. And I like it because it's got a couple of variations. Now, as usual, when we've got shows that have different variations, we'll tell you the most popular version first, and then we'll tell you a couple of little twists that might be a little bit different. So the main focus is going to be on the Brown Lady of Raynham Hall. I will forego asking if you've ever heard of this, because I already know what the answer will be.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm almost afraid to ask if you've ever heard of, like, what a Ford or Chevy is.
Are you talking to me? Oh,
who else would I be talking to?
I don't know.
Ninja?
I thought you were talking to the listeners. And I know what a piece of Ford is. It's a piece of crap. So there you go.
Great. Now everybody who loves Ford, you've already
separated. Sorry, y'all, but every Ford I've had has been a nightmare.
And I've had several Fords and not had any issues. But Tracy's quick to pass judgment on vehicles. It's in Norfolk, England, and it's one of the oldest buildings in the county there. Construction was originally started in 1619, but apparently they didn't have enough supplies. And they didn't have, you know, the stone and stuff.
Oh, they couldn't finish it?
So they just had to put the project on hold a little bit.
Oh, dang.
By 1622, they had enough Ketton stone, now on the property, to begin construction again. This was no quick project, though. Originally, the owner, Sir Roger Townsend, died in 1637. So you're talking 15 years after the construction was restarted. And at this point, it still wasn't completely finished. Apparently, there was, like, somebody else who had moved, one of the other owners that moved into it afterwards, was like, there was no ornamental stuff in it. Like, it was just basically a shell.
Mm-hmm.
So they had the rooms and stuff, but there was, like, a lot of the rooms had no furniture or anything still in it 15 years after the construction started back on it. G.E. Cocaine, I'm sure that may be pronounced different, but it's spelled.
Cocaine, yeah.
But it's spelled. C-O-K-A-Y-N-E. So, I'm going to say G.E. Cocaine. Now, he was a genealogist. He said that Raynham Hall was the first of its kind in England, but that's been disputed by a lot of other historians. What's not disputed is it was one of the most beautiful homes in England at the time. It was done in an Italian style that was completely different than anything else in England, which made it completely stand out. Now, most people give credit to the fact that Sir Townsend, he paid his stonemason to travel with him through Europe for 28 weeks in 1620. So he was able to travel around and get all kinds of ideas that he wouldn't have seen back in England. The home was originally put on 7,000 acres.
Wow, that's a whole bunch.
And the name Raynham Hall comes from the area it's in. So you know how like New York City has the boroughs, and then you have provinces like up in Canada. Well, there's five estate villages right there, and they're all known as Raynhams. So that's what they call each one of the little villages or little Raynhams, just like you would a borough.
That's good to know.
The Townsend family, who owned the property from the very beginning, still owns it 400 years later.
How cool is that? That's so cool.
Now, as far as the brown lady, the first sighting of her was at a Christmas party in 1835. Lord Charles Townsend, he's the one who put on the party. And we'll talk about another Charles Townsend later, but it's not the same one.
I wonder what their parties were like back in the day.
Oh, I can't imagine. Partying like what's 1835.
Oh.
I can't imagine. I mean, I'm sure they had somebody sitting around with a fiddle and, you know, just playing some music or something like that. And there was people dancing and there's probably cornbread everywhere. I don't know.
That'd be cool, though.
It doesn't seem like it would be. I mean, obviously it was fun for them because they didn't know anything different. But looking back now with everything that we have given to us, it probably wouldn't have seemed like much fun to most people. Because like when I watch Little House on the Prairie and I see some of the stuff that they do on that show and that they consider to be fun, I'm like, oh, man.
Look, Paul Ingalls can play the fiddle with no shirt on and his suspenders any day of the week for me.
Did he play the fiddle on there?
He played the fiddle a bunch.
Figures.
So don't be hating.
All right. Well, anyways. There was no Paul Ingalls here, I'm assuming, because this is a little bit
But, you know, it is interesting to kind of figure out about how they did things back in the day for entertainment.
You probably watch Netflix.
I doubt it.
Netflix and chill. So, like I said, we're going to get into the other Lord Charles Townsend later in the show, because you know how these names get passed on. So the bunch of the guests were spending the night at this house because it was huge, so they were just going to stay there. Two of the guests, Lucius Stone and Colonel Loftus, had just finished playing a game of chess. So, I think I just said chess, but it's chess.
Chess,
They played a game of chess. So, that shows you how wild this party was.
Right.
They had a party and they're playing chess.
Yeah.
They decided to call it a night. They started making their way to their sleeping quarters, and they saw something that neither expected. Standing in a doorway was a woman wearing a brown dress that looked dated. That's what drew their attention. There wouldn't have been unusual.
Dated from 1836?
Well, dated just means that it was from way before that time.
It's just hard to wrap your mind around that.
Well, people did wear dresses
I guess
before
so.
That.
True story.
I forgot that's when clothes were invented. Sorry. Breaking news. Clothes were invented in 1836. So anyways, they see this woman, she's got an old dress on, so it stands out, because it wouldn't have been unusual to see a woman up there.
Yeah.
But the dress is what stood out. She disappeared as soon as both men saw her. Just
disappeared vanished.
Instantly. Mm-hmm. Yeah. So they were both freaked out, as you can imagine. The next night, though, Colonel Loftus saw her again. This time, he was able to get a little bit better look at her. He said she was a genteel woman with aristocratic bearing. Can't tell you how many times I've said that about a woman.
I'm not sure I even know what that means.
Well, it just means she was basically a white woman and that she had, she looked sophisticated.
Oh. Why they just say that?
Well, because that's the way he spoke back then, and I'm not going to put words in his mouth. So here's the kicker, though. Her face was glowing, but she had no eyes.
Oh.
So she just kept bumping into walls. I'm just kidding. I made that up. There were just black holes there where her eye sockets were. And he said it looked very intimidating. So he went back to his room, and there's a painting on the wall that was in his room. And he's like, that's her.
Mm-hmm.
That's who I saw. The next sighting was going to be the following year, in 1836. Because Colonel Loftus and Lucia Stone, I guess their story started kind of making its way around, there was an interest in what was going on. Could there really be a ghost at Raynham Hall? That's what everybody was starting to wonder. And Frederick Marriott wanted to see this for himself. Now, he was a Royal Navy captain. He was also an author, but he was also a very huge skeptic when it came to ghosts and stuff. He thought the story was completely made up by smugglers to keep people away because this was where they were hiding their stash and they just didn't want... That's some Scooby-Doo stuff.
Yeah, it is.
He came here with a group of hunters and he tried to prove his theory. Now, part of the group of hunters he had were two nephews of the Townsends, so they were related. He gets to stay in the same room with that same painting that Loftus stayed in the year before. He might have been a skeptic, but he wasn't taking any chances. He kept a loaded gun under his pillow, just in case. So nothing happened on the first two nights he was there. The third night, though, completely different. He turned in for the night, basically, so he's in his room. He's starting to get undressed. He's in an undershirt and a pair of trousers, mm-hmm. which when I hear the description, it makes me think like long johns
mm-hmm.
is what I'm thinking. Two men knock on the door. It was the two men from the hunting party, the two nephews from Lord Townsend. They said they just got this new gun in from London and they wanted him to come down and check it out. And their room was all the way at the other end of the hallway. So, even though he's partially dressed, he gets up and he goes with them. He starts to leave the room and then he kind of stops and he says, I better get my gun in case I see the brown lady. And they're just joking. They're having a good time, yucking it up. So, they get the other men's room and they inspect the gun. And they decide to come back. You know, he's getting ready to leave the room. So, the other guys, they're playing along. They're like, well, we better follow you back to the room in case the brown lady shows up. So they all leave. They're walking down this long, dark hallway. And keep in mind, it's completely dark now because they've got candlelight and stuff. It's before electricity. And they got candlelight and stuff, and they've blown out all the candles. So it's just dark in there.
Mm-hmm.
So they get to about the middle of the hallway, and all three men can see a faint light coming from the other end. It appears to be a lantern. It was coming towards them. So it freaked him out a little bit. One of the guys finally could make it out that it was a woman, and he said he thinks it was one of the ladies going to visit the nursery. And this was one of the ladies from their party that were there staying with them. Well, I told you that he basically was in long johns and an undershirt,
yeah. uh-huh.
which doesn't seem like much today, but back then that would have been completely unsuitable to be dressed in front of a lady. So what they did was, I got kind of explain how this place was laid out. So a lot of these old places, you had your bedroom door, but then they had like another door in front of it.
Mm-hmm.
So you had a door you would open.
Oh, I know. I know what you're talking about.
Yeah, you'd had a door you'd open, a little small space, and then another door.
Uh-huh.
And that's the way this place was. And the bedrooms kind of faced, the doors faced each other. So what happened was, he decides to duck behind one of these initial doors. So he's in the little small waiting room behind the outer doors and then the inner door that would have went to a bedroom. So he just ducks in there. And then the other two guys did the same thing. I don't think they were in the same, but they might have been. I just know they followed suit after he did it. Now he's in a situation where he can peep out through, I guess, the crack of the door to be able to see her coming. They just figured, hey, when she gets past us, then, you know, we can come back out. They just basically didn't want to be seen. As she got closer, Marriott notices that she looks a lot like the woman that's in the painting in his room. He's getting ready to confront her. He's already got his mind made up. He's going to get out and say, what's up? Come see about it. That's a Kentucky reference. Somebody will get it. He had his finger on the trigger of his gun. He was ready. Before he could jump out, though, the brown lady turns, looks right where the guys were hiding, So I guess they were in the same door. She brought the lantern up to her face so you could see her face. He says, his words, she grinned a malicious and diabolical manner at him. That's what he says. So Marriott jumps out from behind the door. He points the gun right in her face and fires.
Oh.
She instantly disappeared. The bullet went through the outer door and lodged into the inner door of the bedroom that was across the hall. All three guys saw this, supposedly. Now, there would be other sightings in upcoming years, but I thought we'd take a second now to talk about who the brown lady is or who people think she is. Most believe that the brown lady is the ghost of Dorothy Townsend. Now, Dorothy was born Lady Dorothy Walpole in 1686. Her brother was supposedly the first prime minister of Great Britain. She fell in love with Lord Charles Townsend. This is a different Lord Charles Townsend than the one who threw the party, obviously, because there's about 150 years difference.
Oh, dang, yeah. I wonder if they were related.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, they were. Yeah. Okay.
So Lord Charles Townsend went to her father, and he asked for her hand in marriage. He really loved her. Her father, though, Robert Walpole, he refused. And this was mainly because he was also Lord Charles's guardian at the time.
Mm-hmm.
And he didn't want it to look like that he was taking advantage of his guardianship, basically putting this guy with his daughter and making them wed. So he just said, it's probably better for both of us, looks-wise, if you just move on. So Charles painstakingly moved on, and he married Elizabeth Pelham. Elizabeth died, though, in 1711, and that left Lord Charles with 5 children.
That's a bunch.
It is. So he, at that point, hooked back up with Dorothy and married her in 1713.
Get out of here. Yep.
So I guess at this point, he didn't have to ask.
Wonder why she died.
I don't know. Unimportant to the story, though.
But he ended up marrying the girl he wanted to marry in the beginning. Well, good for him.
2 years after Elizabeth died. I wonder if he ever did, like, on Sanford and Son and kept... It's a big one, Elizabeth. I'm coming to see you. Every time Dorothy pissed him off.
Mm-hmm.
You think?
I don't know.
Could be. But now, you know, there's a famous quote that says, what somebody doesn't know won't hurt them.
Mm-hmm.
Well, there's another one that says, what they find out could get you killed.
Yeah.
Well, that's kind of along the direction that we're going to go in here. So we talked about the Hellfire Clubs on a couple of different episodes on here. We've done a whole one-on-one. And Lord Wharton was one of the original founders of the Hellfire Club. Now, what does he have to do with anything as far as what we're talking about tonight? Well, during that time that Lord Charles and Dorothy were split up, back when he was refused marriage and went and married Elizabeth, during that time, Dorothy had a little fling with Lord Wharton. Charles apparently had a temper. This was something that was known going into it. He had problems, I think, with his first wife, Elizabeth, with temper. And now they are married, and it shouldn't have even been an issue. But he finds out about her little tryst with Lord Wharton.
Dang, man, you can't get away with nothing. Even back in the day.
It was not pretty. He decided that as punishment. And it's not even punishment, really, because it shouldn't even matter. They weren't together.
Oh, yeah.
You know, it wouldn't like she cheated on him.
Well, yeah, what's up with that?
He was married to somebody else, and that was an issue.
Okay, duh.
He decided that he was going to keep her locked into various rooms in this big-ass house. And on top of that, she was not allowed to see the children.
Come on now. Why didn't the children say something about that?
I don't know. And I don't know if they had any children together either. So he had 5 children from his previous marriage.
Yeah.
They could have been those 5. I don't know if they had any more. I didn't see anything on that. But that was the case until Dorothy died from smallpox in 1726. They got married in 1711 or 1713. And 13 years later, she died. Now, I don't know when this took place and when supposedly she was held captive all this time.
Yeah.
But it could have been almost immediately. I'm not sure about the dates.
Aw, that's sad.
Now, this is where the different variations start coming in. I told you there's a couple. The version we just told is the most common story. But some say that she died from a broken neck after falling or being pushed down some steps. rather than smallpox. Then there's another group of people who say that the funeral that was held in 1726 was a facade. It was fake. And she died years later. And that was just his way of making people thinking that she was gone.
Oh, my goodness.
There's some who even think that the whole story is made up and Lord Charles never imprisoned her to begin with. So nobody really knows.
I wonder which one it is. I mean, surely if he locked her up and he had all those kids, one of those kids would have said something.
It's the 1700s. Kids knew back then that it was don't talk unless you're spoken to, and you wouldn't disobey your parents back in the 1700s like that. It wouldn't like there was a bunch of James Deans running around back then. It's the way it was. So Lord Charles died in 1738.
Hey guys, finding the perfect gift for the food lover in your life is easy. Thanks to Goldbelly. Goldbelly ships America's most iconic foods straight from world-famous restaurants right to your door. So if you want to treat someone to Joe's Stone Crab from Miami, Franklin Barbecue from Texas, or desserts from famous foodies like Ina Garten or Martha Stewart, Goldbelly has you covered with free shipping anywhere in the country. Just go to goldbelly.com and for a limited time, get 20% off your first order with promo code GIFT. That's promo code GIFT.
So now we know about approximately who everybody thinks the brown lady might be. So let's talk about a few more sightings and maybe the most famous ghost picture ever taken. Some of the same names may be confusing in this story, but keep in mind that the Townsends have owned this property for 400 years. So mm-hmm. You're going to hear the name Townsend a lot, and it's going to be different people. So we started off telling you about the Christmas party thrown by Lord Charles, and obviously this was almost 100 years later than the other Charles. Lord Charles had already passed away 100 years before that.
I'm sure the entertainment got better.
I would hope so. So in 1926, now we're 90 years after that, the initial sightings, Lady Townsend said that her son and his friend saw the brown lady on a staircase. Just quick. That was all it was.
Just a real quick sighting?
Yeah, that's all there was. Not really any details or anything other than that. But the most famous of all the appearances would be on September 19th, 1936. We're coming up on that anniversary. We're only a couple of days away. So a couple of photographers from a magazine called Country Life Magazine, they were going to come out and do an expose on the home, and do an article and stuff on it. Captain Hubert Provand and his assistant, Indri Shearer, they spent the day wandering around Raynham Hall, taking pictures of everything and anything they could, because the place is strictly beautiful and it's huge, so it was an all-day affair. They had taken several pictures and decided to finish up with the grand staircase. They took one picture, supposedly, this is according to their story, and they were getting ready for a second one. Keep in mind, this was one of those old cameras that had the hood on the back of it, so you would put your head
under
the hood and look through.
Oh.
And then you had the little remote you would have in your hand.
Did it make a poof go off?
I don't think it was that. It wasn't that old of a camera.
Oh.
But it had the one where you would press a button and it would take a picture and activate the flash. That was a separate flash. The lens cap's on. And we'll talk about some discrepancies a little bit later. So the lens cap's on.
Okay, they know that's not how it works, right?
I understand that. And that's why I said we'll talk about that in a little bit. So Provand's head is underneath the hood. Shearer is actually holding the flash thing, the button to push for the flash. And he says, Shearer, that he sees a vapory form gradually turning into a woman coming down the stairways. So he tells Provand to hurry up, take the lens cap off as quickly as possible. He takes the lens cap off. He flashes the picture quick. Lickety split. This picture would become one of the most famous paranormal pictures in history. It's also one of the most controversial ones ever taken, and for several reasons. Country Life magazine published this story and the picture on December 26, 1937. And then Life magazine reposted the picture a week later on January 4th of 1937. So we talked about Harry Price before, mainly on the Borley Rectory show. Very well-known paranormal investigator at the time. And he was the go-to man in the 30s when it came to something like this. He took an interest in it, obviously, after seeing the pictures, and he invited himself in, much the way the Warrens do. And he said, and I quote, "I will say at once I was impressed." He said he was told about the story from the two guys, and he couldn't shake the story and had no right to disbelieve them. He said the only collusion between the two men would account for the ghost if it is a fake. He said that the negative is entirely innocent of any faking. So he's convinced this is 100%
that's the real thing.
But as far as the controversy goes, there's many reasons to believe that the pic or the story was not genuine. Now, for example, you touched on it right there. Why do you have your head under there to take a picture? If you're getting ready to shoot a second picture to begin with, why do you have the lens cap on?
Mm-hmm.
Now, I don't know enough about old cameras. Maybe there was a reason why you had to do it for, maybe you had to put it on to keep light from coming in while you changed the film or something. I don't know.
Maybe that's a good guess.
So maybe somebody will tell me. But that was the first thing that went through my mind. Why do you have the lens cap on if you're going to take the picture? Also, people think that it could just be an accident, that maybe some light just accidentally got in. It caused the picture to look funny. But most people seem to think that it was a hoax perpetrated by the two men. Here's why. They think it's possible that a small amount of grease could have been smeared on the lens to make it look like, hey, here's the stairway and here's a little image that will make it look like, you know, a see-through blob or something on there. So that's what some people think it was. But most seem to think that it was a carefully crafted double exposure. John Fairley and Simon Welfare, they were two investigators. They noticed the picture, and then I said, we'll post this picture so everybody will be able to see it. But they noticed that there's a very pale line at the top and the bottom of the image, and you can see it like on the stairway. Because obviously, so right above the stairs, on the top and the bottom, below the stairs, you'll see this very pale line. So that would look like that one picture was superimposed over another.
Were they able to do that back in the day?
Oh, yeah, yeah.
Oh.
So, we got that. Okay, so there's another picture possibly superimposed. But what is the picture of? Most people seem to think that it looks like a statue of the Virgin Mary. You know the statue. You've seen, everybody's seen it. They're always, you know, the Virgin Mary standing there with her hands in the little dress thing and all that stuff. Okay. The thing of it is if you look at this thing closely, it looks like that she's got her hands in a praying motion.
Mm-hmm.
The dress is in a V-shaped garment like you would see on all those statues. And if you look really closely, there's even a square block at the bottom that looks like it could be a base. There was a magician over in the United States by the name of John Booth. He said that he thought he could duplicate that same picture just doing something naturally without doing any superimposing or anything. And what he was able to do was, he and a magician by the name of Ron Wilson, not the Ron Wilson we know, he had Ron Wilson cover himself up in a bed sheet and walk down the grand staircase at the Magic Castle in Hollywood. And the picture that he took looked very similar to the picture that was in Raymond Hall.
Mm-hmm.
And you could imagine that too. If you had a sheet over top of you, like, you know, most kids dress up for Halloween with a ghost, and you held your hand out a little bit, it would probably would look similar to what the Virgin Mary statue also. So that was one of the things that had taken place that kind of disproved it. But there are still many people who believe that this is a real picture. Is there a brown lady? Well, if you ask Lord Raynham, he thinks there is. He says, she isn't here to haunt the house, but she is still here, and I'm glad she's around. So that's something from local. Now, she hasn't supposedly been seen since the day of that picture. Now, keep in mind, we've talked about every sighting, which was, what, four?
Mm-hmm.
Two the first night, or two the very first two nights.
Mm-hmm.
And then you had one the following year. And then you had the lady saw, her son saw, and then the picture one.
Yeah.
If the picture one even happened. So there's only four sightings over the course of 400 years. She's due, I would think, for
another one. I'm sure she is.
So while she hasn't been seen a ton at Random Hall, she has been seen at some other places. For example, she has shown up at Sandringham House, which is up the road. I think it's, if I remember correctly, it was about 8 miles up the road. But that's the house that she lived in with her father and all that before she moved, got married and moved to Random Hall. Prince of Wales, George the Fourth, he stayed there one night. I don't know what year this was. I didn't see that. But he had the crap scared out of him there. So he woke up one night, and he said she was sitting at the foot of his bed. He supposedly got up and left immediately. And he said, "I will not spend another hour in this accursed house. For tonight I have seen that which I hope to God I never see again."
I bet if she was massaging his feet, he wouldn't say that.
Probably not. Probably not. That's what happens, though. So what about Random Hall? Are there other hauntings at Random Hall besides the infamous brown lady? The answer is yes.
I was going to say, I'm sure there has to be. She ain't going to be haunting all by herself.
I'm glad I asked that question for you. So people have reported seeing two children, not sure who they are, a Cocker Spaniel.
Nice.
And the Duke of Monmouth. There's a really short, but I thought kind of funny story about him. So this older woman, she was described as an elderly spinster. She spent the night at Random Hall, and she said that the Duke of Monmouth paid her a visit in her bedroom. She said she liked it and found it very flattering.
Okay, TMI.
I don't know if she had a Bobby Brown experience or not. But this last part, I'm going to add, and complete disclosure on this. We love Haunted Places by Parcast. We've done some advertising for them, and it's one of our favorite shows. They did an awesome episode on this one. I would advise anybody to go listen to it. It's completely different than ours.
Yeah.
But there was a story that I couldn't find anywhere else. I'm going to paraphrase it because I couldn't find proof anywhere other than their story. But they have a lot bigger research staff than we have and a little more money behind it.
Good for them.
So I'm going to assume the story is accurate, or it's at least out there somewhere. So like I said, I don't remember the names and everything on here except for, it's really not important. And anyways, let me jump into it. I'm just babbling now. So supposedly after the date the pictures was taken, Andrew Shira was like in his dark room, just focused on this picture about what came out. He was so surprised by it. And then a couple of days later, he was like, you know what? I can't keep dwelling on this. I've got, you know, work to do. And he had a photo session set up with a Lady Thornton. So he goes to Lady Thornton's house. She's got this dog. And I think the dog was a Cocker Spaniel or something that, you know, smaller dog. He says when he comes in, he sets the camera up, the dog just barks nonstop at the camera, constantly barking at it. She picks the dog up, and she wants a picture of her and the dog. And he's like, okay, you know. He goes take a picture, but this whole time this dog's snarling at him and all this stuff, which she said the dog never does. Well, he finally gets the picture. She's like, just, you know, this dog's not going to stop, so just take the picture. So he takes the picture. So she's telling him to go ahead and take the picture. She's holding this dog, and the dog basically pees all over her. She's disgusted. She lays the dog down. She goes to change her clothes. And the dog starts having like some kind of seizure or something. So he walks past the dog that's just laying there. Fainting all that. And he leaves. And he's developing the pictures and all that stuff. Something looked really weird in the pictures. So he goes to the house a couple days later. He goes to the house and a man answers the door that he doesn't recognize. And he's like, "Who are you?" And the guy says, "I'm a taxidermist." He's like, "Well, why are you a taxidermist? I mean, why are you here? Why is the taxidermist here?" And he's like, "Well, her dog passed away.
Aww.
And she wanted to have him taxidermied." And he's like, "Oh, well, that's sad, but why are you answering the door, not one of the servants?" He said, "They're all at a funeral." And he said, "They're all at a funeral?" She's like, "Yeah, Lady Thornton passed away also."
No.
Her heart stopped. So then he's thinking, "Oh, well, maybe there's something up with his camera." So he hurries up to make sure his partner Provin is not taking the camera to go take pictures with, because he thinks now something's messed up with his camera.
Yeah.
As far as, you know, cursed or something. So he goes, gets back to his shop, and he walks in, and Indri's 8-year-old son is there taking basically selfies with the camera.
Oh, crap.
And that's kind of where they left it off at.
No.
Well, he says that, well, it wasn't exactly where he left it off. He says that he could see the image of the brown lady, like, in between the camera and the sun.
Oh.
Just standing there. But then that's where he left it.
And he left it at that.
So, like I said, I couldn't find that anywhere else. And that's full credit to Haunted Places, because that's actually their story. But they'll tell it a lot better than what I told. But I thought it was interesting, and I wanted to add it to the story.
Yeah. Wow, that's so crazy. Poor puppy doggy.
So, okay. So that finishes our story of the week. So a couple of things. First and foremost, this coming weekend, I am going to be at the Mothman Festival on Sunday, which is what, the 23rd, 22nd, I don't know, whatever next Sunday is. I'll be at the Mothman Festival from 12 to 4. So if any of you guys are going to be out there anyway, stop out and, you know, send me a message on Facebook or something. Tracy will not be there. So that means probably nobody will come see me.
Oh, that's not true.
But yeah, Tracy's got something else going on. She's going to be a Great Wolf Lodge with our granddaughter for her birthday, so she can't make it. I didn't know I was making it until literally yesterday.
Oh, literally. I know you like just decided yesterday. Yeah.
Because I didn't know what was going on Sunday, or I would have been out there. But we've got the Point Pleasant show 2 weeks later. So shameless lead in. So the Point Pleasant show is 2 weeks later, so I can go basically hand out some flyers and talk to some people and be cool. So anyways, that's going on. Twisted Philly and our shows are combining for an October 12th Philadelphia live show. You heard the commercial for that at the very beginning.
Excited about that.
Very cool. And let's see. iTunes reviews. Big Dog EMT.
Thank you for your service, sir.
I think it's Ratch Rack 3. Nero Zen. Halloween Holly C. Spidey 1011. Annan Ree. Dazed for Days. That's a shout out to Charlie and Cody.
What up, Charlie and Cody?
Cody the Water Boy, Layman. Magravo 2018. All Might and Mama 88. And Joshua the Hairy Beast.
And just how hairy are you, Joshua?
We don't need to see those pictures. I'll take your word for it. And keep in mind, these reviews help us out tremendously.
Yes,
We don't say it as much as we probably need to, but if you can leave a review on iTunes, Apple Podcasts, whatever they're calling it these days, that helps us out a lot. So
really appreciate them too.
Speaking of helping us out a lot, Patreons. Always Never Right. That's a fun podcast. So if you're not listening, go listen to that. Dennis Gates, Sheila Perkins, Jessica Wilson, Tiffany Boots, Stuart Jackson, and Philip McCart. Thank you guys, because you guys are the reasons that we're able to do the live shows and stuff like that. We've said on here a bunch of times that the live shows barely pay for themselves. You guys are what pays for the travel to and from hotel rooms and all that stuff. That's why we're able to do that. So
thank you. We appreciate you guys, really.
Hey guys, finding the perfect gift for the food lover in your life is easy. Thanks to Goldbelly. Goldbelly ships America's most iconic foods straight from world-famous restaurants right to your door. So if you want to treat someone to Joe's Stone Crab from Miami, Franklin Barbecue from Texas, or desserts from famous foodies like Ina Garten or Martha Stewart, Goldbelly has you covered with free shipping anywhere in the country. Just go to goldbelly.com and for a limited time, get 20% off your first order with promo code GIFT. That's promo code GIFT.